And welcoming you back, dear listeners. Technically, yes, we didn't say hello for today. But you know what? There's always a first time. And specifically welcoming you to the last Monday of 2025. I hope some of you guys already have that ridiculous, you know, fake promising situation going once again. You know, when people write their New Year's resolutions. This year, I'm going to decide to go to the gym. Yeah, and we all look at you at, 11:59, and then literally at midnight, we're going to ask you, so, have you already got your gym subscription? And then obviously, most logically, you'll respond with, don't be a dummy. You know, the gym only opens up at 8 a.m. on 1 January. Of course it does. Of course it does. But you know what? We all just love being trolls. We all just love being a little bit of a, you know, I almost said the bona fide, but a human in that scenario technically would not come in good with good intentions, because obviously we wish to tease a little bit and be a little bit sarcastic with, all those particular peoples around ourselves and the communities that love making promises for the new year as if someone has ever stuck to their New Year's resolutions ever in their lives in the potential 1 million years that, you know, humanity has existed. But you know what? Each unto their own. We'll still do this particular trend, counting down obviously to the 31st of December, that being Wednesday, where I will say, today is the last day of this year. Obviously, this being the last Monday of this year. But you find yourself, dear listeners, here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. This is the Holiday Reads, and I'm going to dial down a little bit of that particular sort of like Joker mentality I just had a few seconds ago. But before we continue, actually, dear listeners, we're quickly going to take a short break and come back right after that. The 2026 applications are now open for the Ungwadiva Achievers Private Center Boost Your Grade 11 NSSCO Results. We are designed to help learners obtain better grade 11 NSSCO results, intensive practical and teacher-led sessions, affordable fees with flexible payment options. The subjects on offer are English as a second language, Oshindonga, biology, chemistry, physics, mathematics, development studies, agricultural science, geography, history, economics, business studies, entrepreneurship, and accounting. How to apply, complete the application and pay the application fee, which is 150 Namibian dollars. Email the application to Ungwadiva Achievers Private Center at wu.edu.na. Alternatively, send your application via WhatsApp to +264 8165151 5138. For more information, call Mr. Natangwe at cell number +264 8165151 5138. Ungwadiva Achievers Private Center, empowering minds, shaping futures. Coming back specifically from the short break and where we left off, obviously, as we take or head into this particular Monday discussion. Now, back on Friday where we left off, dear listeners, we were looking obviously at, in Friday's session, obviously, into the classical reads or the classical orders, authors to start from. Now, interesting enough, just to share this particular sort of like a small digression with you before we start off with today's subject matter, because we once again be looking at a classical reading list specifically that you would still find somewhere, primarily at your second-hand book dealerships. You'll have to scratch and scrounge extensively if you go to, brand new to the book dealerships that sell brand new books. But second-hand book dealerships obviously potentially might have this genre. This is unfortunately for women out there, this is predominantly a male dominated genre, primarily that it speaks about, manly men situations, in a situation, but not situationship in a scenario of relationships. No. This is obviously a genre based upon, adventure as well as also, a lot of conflict elements being present within it. But that's specifically where our discussion will head to. What I just wanted to position as a linkage between Friday's discussion of classical authors or classical literature and classical authors to start from and writers to start from, specifically if you're going to get into this particular, what do they call it? I almost said role, but into this particular groove of, you know, of reading literature. Because, I mean, anyone can read research reports all day long, specifically from an academic perspective. But then there's also context of, you know, do you expand your reading in terms of reading something else as well? Now, I had a discussion earlier with one of my siblings, specifically because I was watching there was sort of like a Christmas video that one of the economists that I follow specifically on YouTube, Gary Stevenson, he had a Christmas message, and he shared some of his interesting reads that he always reads. And he cited there specific in his YouTube video that he loves reading at least, at any given time during the course of a year, at least 10 books at the same time. Now, it is possible. What I say by this and what I mean by this is, in many cases, you find some of these people that have odd reading patterns. In some cases, they are advanced readers. When I say advanced readers, I'm talking about these are people that every week they've started a new book, or they started with a new book. In many scenarios, and I know specifically how it, you know, if you look at a professional's life in Namibia, whether you are starting out as a young professional, that's obviously with your first job, or if you are an advanced professional with a family and all those things, people just put reading to the one side, and, you know, once in a blue moon, they will pick it up. I've actually tried, you know, practicing my mind and specifically keeping up with my reading habit, but it's short format reading, and it's mostly reading on a screen, reading on a phone, on a computer screen, and on things like, you know, all these particular digital surfaces, which, you know, shine light back, and in many cases, it does sort of like impact my sight, or impact my eyes, not my sight, but my eyes a lot. Because it's in some cases you know the bright light impacts it, but when it comes to reading books, they have a softer touch. All you need is probably just a well lit area, and then you just sit down and you just continue. So Gary started with citing his favorite books that he loves reading. Now, most of the things that he started from, I watched in sort of like a TV format, or in a, you know, reproduction of with actors format. And the one book he started off with, the first book he started off with, which is a book I've heard about, never read, but the author I've read at least two books of. He started with Charles Dickinson's David Copperfield. Why he has read David Copperfield, and why he has always read Charles Dickens novels, is because Charles Dickens projects and illustrates to you. You could be in 2025 and Charles Dickens will illustrate to you the hardships that specifically you see, or you have experienced, you feel some relatable context to the Charles Dickens, world. Even though he wrote it in the 1800s, the book, you will still find some element of relativity in your life as a Namibian. You'll find it. You'll see it. And you'll be able to make that particular connection with Dickens. Now, remember, dear listeners, and I explained this back on Friday, that Dickens technically illustrated to the world after him what the first industrial revolution was all about. How it brought turmoil to the lower classes, and started disrupting the middle classes and all that. People had now to try and understand what a factory was, you know, what needs to be produced. And at that particular stage, the UK was known as Great Britain, because Great Britain was the label they used for their colonial prowess and their possessions. And primarily, they were literally the center of the earth, Literally. London, the United Kingdom at that stage was literally the center of everything in the world. There's a funny particular thing that also exists, historically, and this you will find. These are factual situations that I always share. I always share facts. I don't share, you know, exaggerated elements that I cannot prove. There are so many countries in this world. that at least has experienced one or other format of British colonialism, literally British colonialism, during the modern world era. So we're talking about the last 200 years. So from now, 2025, heading back to 1800. Last 200 years, and even earlier, sorry, let's push that even earlier to 1750 at least. There's not a single country on this planet that has not been colonized or administered or had or did not have British troops in its territory. Just to illustrate to you specifically, you see that macro picture, you get to a micro picture that Dickens illustrates. And yes, I mean, Dickens illustrated three formats of, you know, how can you call it? Like the character struggling with everyday things. You had, what's the guy's name from Great Expectations? Pip, who was his sister and his brother-in-law were his legal guardians. They had to give him up specifically to become a playmate. Yes, a playmate. There was such a thing back then in the 1800s. They had to give him up specifically. They were paid. They were compensated by this woman who lived close by, a very rich woman, so that he can become a playmate for the niece of this woman who was his same age, so that the niece did not feel lonely. The unfortunate thing with that story of Great Expectations was that Pip could never fall in, even though he did fall in love with, what was her name? What was the girl's name? Estelle, yeah. He did fall in love with Estelle. Pip's actual name was Philip. So Philip did fall in love with Estelle. He just could not, if you're now talking like business sense, he could not close the deal. Because she was always just that girl from the other side of the tracks. You are the boy from this side of the tracks. She's not in your league, my guy. You will never get there. And every time Pip shows, you know, encountered these scenarios. Even when Pip, saved the convict, the guy that escaped from the brig. Even when he helped the convict, because he brought the convict a pie and a file, so that the convict could literally cut the chains. But what do they have the shackles, yes. So that the convict could cut the shackles because they didn't have cuffs, you know, like modern day police cuffs that what the police use. They had literally shackles. So he brought those two things, which made him technically a accomplice. And obviously at that stage, the convict had the opportunity of escaping. The convict left the UK Isles, and specifically when Philip, after now growing into a teenage boy, and from a teenage boy, then, you know, he was then given the opportunity to become to go and pursue something in London, because the lady that paid his sister, literally, this was child trafficking, guys, in the 1800s. It happened. The lady who paid his sister to be a playmate for the lady's niece, Estelle, also then advanced Philip's education. He obviously got access to education. He got access to, better clothes, and then he was obviously sent off. Estelle was sent off somewhere else. When Pip became Philip, but he was still the same guy, but when he got to London, he had a very weird encounter. A weird encounter whereby, in that stage, you know, since you didn't have things that are digital like we now have, there was a scenario where you had to sort of like, if you attend a school, which is at that stage, think of it like a community college, or like a VTC, or because our VTCs are now going to be upgraded to college level so that they can offer more or higher level of their particular quality of service provision. So when they had those things primarily back then, because the UK technically just has three like elite schools, which is the one in London, which is the London School of Economics, LSE. There's also another, I think it's Trinity College also in London, the one for the arts. Then there is there's Oxford and obviously, Cambridge. Cambridge, which literally developed an education system for the developing world. If you guys did not know, that is where our education system comes from. So if you guys were also looking into, you know, just how weak we as Africans technically are. But yeah, that's the situation that comes from it. But before I continue to listen, we're going to take a short ad break and come back right after this.
Sometimes you have to raise a Vindhuk beer and say cheers to you, the real ones. You know, the ones who save you a spot for the game when the bar is crowded. The ones who offer to drive for the night to keep everyone safe. The ones who bring you a cold Vindhuk beer without being asked. When they're there for you in ways you never knew you needed, they aren't just friends. They're the real ones. So cheers to them. Vindhuk, 100% real beer for real people. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Now coming back to your listeners there from the quick break, and obviously you find yourself here on the Holiday Reads, here on the number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. Now, all those particular things that went through there in the Charles Dickens novel of Great Expectations was you could see some form of relativity. There was at one stage, you know, at one stage, there was some of us, we did experience, there was a girl that we liked, there was a guy that we liked, but we were just two different leagues, you know, that you just will never get there. I've had many of those particular experiences. Hint, hint. But anyway, now, Gary Stevenson, the economist I told you from at the start, who highlights his particular reading list for 2025 and what he always likes, he shared that primarily at the heart of why he reads and loves Charles Dickens is, like I said, the relativity you can see. Things that happened 150 years back, or 80 years, almost 200 years now, are things that you can see happening today. Remember, in the first Industrial Revolution, dear listeners, there was a discussion of shifting agrarian-based communities or agrarian-based populations, meaning you had too many people in rural areas, shifting them from the rural areas to the urban centers where there are services so that they go and work in the industrial bases that are concentrated there, in the factories, in the other particular shops, and that they go for education. They upskill their skills and they improve and they learn more. And so too, those that wish to stay the true farmers are the only people left in the rural communities. That was the heart. That was the aim of the Industrial Revolution. It's the aim that Namibia also wishes to achieve. It is the unfortunate aim that Namibia wishes to achieve. Go and read the NDP6. You will see the overarching message found within the National Development Plan 6, and you will understand what Namibia's overall goal is. Then you will go out into your community and you will see the opposite of what is actually happening towards what is envisioned or envisaged within NDP6. Now, turning obviously, you know, everything upside down and just highlighting to you how classical reads always stay relevant and they actually always inform you about the world. Yes, sometimes a book can be 50 years old, as long as it's not an academic book, guys. You can still have an academic book that would tell you what the information was back then. But sometimes also with academic works, they get made irrelevant, firstly because of time, secondly because data sets probably changed, and thirdly because another researcher came through and, you know, had better tools to conduct their research with, thus improving on the previous work, or secondly, rejecting the previous work. In a scenario specifically of today's particular aspects, we always look at literature. With literature, they always inform, because they always aim to display to you real events that happened in history that are profound even still today. Now, before we continue, dear listeners, we'll quickly be taking a short break. Actually, it'll be an extended break, and we'll see each other after this break.
So, you've got everything sorted for tomorrow?
Yeah, man. Meat, spice, poikis ready. Even got some playlists lined up, bro.
And the crew? They're all coming, right?
Howie, everyone's in. It's gonna be lekker.
Wait. What about the tassies?
Bruh,
you can't get without tassim, bruh. It's like cabana without salsa, dog. Tassimber. Best together. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
Tabire. Amahus carrying how I hope this. Amahus carrying how I hope this. Neske Kaising Hang Hansa. Ria Kosa Haisi Arms. Ministries Panagas. Au Kos Ami. Sing Huba Kabatoragas. Is this a Huhasa? To Hobane Haisi Amsa. Orisa Seta. Si Sadu Tong in. An Ariaun. Si Kurisan. Ha Toraguri. Oh, ne Ahasi. Carrying how I Huba. Amatin Amahus. Tim Ahasi. Tip Diba. Tarin aroma tarin hawa in hukya an hanutin hu chingi khama i tau i nga u tuiska i khabe a amahin wa ma tau i kui nga uska khabe eban aman uis tamaska iyo o amahiske hose an hanu unga wakao ahasi tarin hawa in huba haba koratas hanumas hanumas kwas koros tams neyus li tiske ngadi i ahasiga a chisera kain hanu Amahus, ti Haragagu, Ovagu, Hanusi, Haragu, Am Marisi, ti Holmes, Harabaa, Uyehe, Ha, Nuhasi, Homas, Amahus, Damaska, Io, Amas, Tarin Hawaii, Hupiske, Nanku was, ti Tamasamasiba, Nuhasi, Aromabata, Tare, Nestatsning, Anse, E, Ari, Hawaii, Hukia, Watadi. Toragu hera ui malkui waini kaiban amahu ge sabu umisan unka kari hawain huban unka sta sabu hao ngasi umisadu unka si sabu namibeba hauba hanu unga ahasika murika hana iduka ui skama in hanu unga hum amahu de hasa ainsao o ngasa Aw ngasi kai twis kari how I hu abemas tamaska iyo o kaise sat tava a tu ministeris peros sa abe mamas tava si murire ada sisen are sada kari how I hu tin uiga waha suriku aroman uisan wa ministeris ke twis kama I wa ngai hu uiku di hanu ama hus kari how I hu tis di in aroma ere am khaba tite Ains nga uhari kari hawain hukia ain unha adan iba wadan aroma ngorasa si abosasi uha gangans sa sisen are aroma nehaisi amski marisi mahokas hanu republiki namibia ti si kai ares republiki twitch hoop ti bhaka ha twitch hoop om kansis marikais ka efis nga ua utrisa ngasan ansa tohoba ministeris Perodi, San Abe Plantudi, Tamaska EO, Haisakain Aresperos, Ministries, Hanakas, Alcos, Tim Hook Tabatoragas, Disa, Saura Tamikwas, Taima Nani, Tui Tam Taima Kaisa, Nani, Taima Hagastava, Tamibari, Horagan, Harugudi, Sisin Uira, Directed Tanira, Hua, Uhe.
We come back, dear listeners, and heading into the 6 to 7 scenario or part of today's discussion here on Holiday Reads, here in the number one talk radio station. Now, I cited to you just before the break that when you read literature, you can have fiction and non-fiction literature. With non-fiction, obviously, tells you about real-life events or inspired by real-life events, that weird explainer that sometimes is given. But when you look at fictional literature, there is always a scenario, or there are scenarios that are depicted to you that illustrate, in many cases of, you know, the classical authors, of a situation that was, or scenarios that had happened, or instances that had come before, that had emerged or come about. That they are not anomalies, they are not far-fetched ideas, and that they are not, in many potential cases, you know, just fairy tales. But we get into today's particular discussion based upon looking at Western or classical Western books. In many cases, these are your quintessential cowboy books, you know, to use the other term. And these were usually the authors that would introduce you to scenarios of you imagining just being out there in the wild on horseback, experiencing man and nature, that kind of a situation. I don't want to like using the word vibe, but the word vibe always comes from the longer word vibration. Because to vibe along or to feel a vibe or to be in a vibe of situation of something usually sounds, it doesn't actually describe the particular, you know, picture or a situation at best, because all it does is technically, you know, paint it in an informal sense. So, Westerns, not to be confused with the Western label for popular reads. Please, guys, when you try looking it up, sometimes, you know, the internet search will circumvent or deviate your search parameter to, hey, these are the popular Western reads. And then you click on that first selection, you go like, these are not Westerns, you know, these are not American Western books, because they were predominantly just written by Americans. And predominantly they featured just in America, in the United States, during a certain period of the 1800s. It was also a period, I only discovered recently that period was known as the expansion period or the American expansion period. This is the period specifically where, since America has 50 stars on its flag, each of the stars represent a state in the country. And that is, as you know, they were adding more states, known as the expansionist period, you know, in that scenario, adding more states to become part of the Union, as they call it, the American Union. And in many particular cases, in that period specifically, that was just before the American Civil War, just after the American Civil War. Many of the particular, you know, Western stories take place just before the American Civil War, during the American Civil War, and just after. Obviously, some of the if there are certain titles that you ran into specifically, you will find that many of them take place during a period specifically, as the American army is literally in direct conflict with many of the Native American tribes after the Civil War, after the American Civil War, because the American Civil War was between 1860 to 1864, so, or 1859 to 1860 something. So in that particular period, you obviously can see the extent of, okay, there's a specific chapter of American history, and then other things pop up afterwards. Now, when you're looking at what these Westerns, these American Westerns and these cowboy books literally represent, and guys, I'm not ashamed to say it. I read a lot of them, and there were a lot of good stories in all of the stories and all of those Westerns that I read. That I loved. I did not like the Westerns specifically that were produced as movies. I didn't like the movies. I loved the books. To start off with my favorite example, which is my saddest example actually to share. Why it is the saddest? Because it was an incomplete story. The incomplete story being that the last four pages were missing. You know, the storyline is building up. The actual villain in the whole story is now making his move. The good guy, which you're definitely going to be part of from page one, is now realizing, oh my goodness, this is the actual villain in the story. And then just as we're getting to literally the big showdown, because the showdown was always a scenario of a gunfight, as you would know, the last four pages are missing, and I'm like, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. The last four pages are missing. Now, if you don't know, to any reader out there, to any librarian out there, to any information, what do they call those people that are the information system specialist out there, which is literally the glorified name that librarians have. I'm sorry, librarians, but literally it's a glorified name. We know you work with information, but anyone can work with information on a daily basis. I'm an information broker every day as a journalist. You know, we go and get information, make it in a readable scenario, position it and thus, you know, distribute the information from there. Or I come on air here specifically and I'm an information broker, specifically over subject matters you potentially might not have heard about. So, any librarian, any avid reader out there, specifically, will be mortified if you tell them that the last four pages, or that any set amount of pages are missing out of a book, which is quintessential, not quintessential, which is essential, which is critical to the whole idea of the information within the said publication being complete, because there's no bigger crime than having incomplete information. And then basing and, you know, judging a book by its cover, literally, on incomplete information contained within said particular book, with said particular missing pages. Another particular scenario that's also very interesting to, you know, to highlight from my reading exposure specifically to Western, American Westerns. There was another one that, you know, it was one of the first times actually that I, at that stage, you know, as you're reading, you then realize that in certain scenarios, you know, some of the Western titles back then had, they had blatant racism. I'll call it what it is. Back then they had blatant racism in it. Specifically towards, that's now black Americans. And at that stage, they would have obviously been a slave and to Native Americans at that specific scenario. And yes, the story is being genuine. They're sticking to a genuine element in terms of how things would have been, and how things would have been portrayed in that scenario. And even though the author was writing this particular book in the 1950s or in the 1940s, it was a scenario that they had to stick true to. One of the most famous of these American Western authors is Louis Lamoureux. If you guys have ever heard of Louis Lamoureux, it's not his real name per se, because it's actually a nom de plume that he actually took on. A nom de plume, dear listeners, is like a different author or a different name that an author takes on. So Louis Lamoureux, known as, no, actually it was his real name. It actually was his real name. Sorry for that. Correction on my side. So Louis Lamoureux, he was a short story writer and a novelist, and he's actually known as one of the great authors of the American Western genre. Because it's a genre that only the Americans can own specifically. Okay, you can impose it in a Southern African context. You can do it in a South American context, and you can do it in an Australian context. But specifically, there's a great appeal with the American, you know, with the American setting, because, you know, there was a lot of particular, I'll call it romance. What the romance is? The romance is the setting, the actors. Not the actors per se like acting, but actors being the various particular stakeholders. The elements, man versus nature, man versus man, all those particular. And then in between there's a romance. But there's not an emphasis on the romance. It's just like, you know, inserting it in there to complete it, to complete one part of the story, to say there is this love, sort of like this particular love interest that pops up. Like in many of the particular Westerns that I read, there was always a love interest for the main character. The love interest was either a neutral person that didn't select a side. It was either someone that was the daughter of the bad guy, or, you know, they had a particular role here and a particular role there. And they were fun reads. Now, when you look at American Westerns, dear listeners, as I mentioned, you've got to be sure about what you step into if you're an avid reader and you wish to get into these reads or this particular reading genre, because this reading genre is deemed as, in many cases, as one of the final sort of like frontiers of what, you know, a man should look like. Yes, I threw that sentence in there because it was literally the sentence that was used when the book, when the movie, what's the cowboy movie that starred Heath Ledger? Brokeback Mountain. When Brokeback Mountain came out, there was a article that literally said, you know, throwing, obviously, doing a review of the movie, going like literally the fabled and the holy sort of like setting of a cowboy or cowboys not having any particular, you know, same-sex relations is sort of like the last particular, masculine bastion of that nature that had been torn down in the modern movie-making scene. But remember, the movie Brokeback Mountain was a unique movie. And it was brought out by a unique director. The director was not a white guy. Just so that you know, the director of Brokeback Mountain is not a white guy. And that two very good actors, Heath Ledger and Jake Gyllenhaal, played the two main characters. Now, that in its own right is not the Western that you need to look at. Because in many cases, that is a Western, but it's not a book. It's a movie. And it's a movie that took place in the last 15 to 20 years. So you are once again stuck in a little bit of a confusing space because a Western doesn't have cars. Or if it did have cars, you need to put it a little bit further back. You know, you put it in the 50s, the 60s, the 80s. The settings that you're going to be looking at are some of the, you know, some of the recommended reads, potentially, that you will still find out there, that would still be in print. As I said, in many cases in Namibia, you'll have to consult with your secondhand bookstores or bookshops, and then just, you know, tap them up for recommendations, ask them, you know, what is out there and what do they recommend. And in many particular scenarios, when you got to look at American Western novels, you're always going to start from the heavyweights. When I say the heavyweights, there's a few guys that I have not read. I have read A Louis Lamois, but it's also a little bit of a weird particular take. When I say a weird particular take, it's a scenario of what kind of book did Dwight, you know, in that sense read. So I highlighted to you that there's a few novels I did read and a few I did not that would be on this particular list that I'm going to share with you. And you've got to look at this from your particular reading perspective, what you wish to expect or what you wish to achieve from your own particular, you know, interests in terms of the style. Now, I've got to mention here, obviously, when reading, it takes you to a different place, you know, because reading is escapism. Just so also, watching a movie is escapism, watching a TV series is escapism, watching sport is escapism, playing a sport is escapism, even though it's a healthy activity in some cases, in some scenarios. So, just to let you know, dear listeners, you've got to be committed to understanding another genre and what the genre also has to offer. I actually want to start from one that I had not read. I have the book for it because it's technically the oldest of the storylines I have in front of me. It's one I have not read. I've watched the movie because the movie is almost 3 hours long. And the movie stars one of the best actors. Many people will tell you today that this guy is probably the best actor that has ever existed. If you don't know who Daniel Day-Lewis is, he played in There Will Be Blood, about the oil, you know, the first oil wells that were discovered in the state of Texas in America. It's obviously a storyline that takes place in the 1900s, just before 1910. He played in Gangs of New York opposite Leonardo DiCaprio, where many people said it was a mistake putting Leonardo DiCaprio opposite Daniel Day-Lewis. He played in, what was the other movie's name? There was one other movie he also did between those two, between There Will Be Blood and, how could I forget that movie? But he was in, Last of the Mohicans. This is the particular movie I have watched. Now, Last of the Mohicans is very peculiar to add onto an American Western list. Why do I say it's very peculiar? Okay, the movie is almost 2 hours long. Why do I say it's very peculiar? Well, the peculiarity specifically is that the book was written before the American Revolution, before the United States became a independent country, before there was an idea of a United States. The Last of the Mohicans is positioned in the middle of the French Indian War. Now, what was the French Indian War? The French Indian War was open conflict between the British and the French, because the British wanted Canada, or that specific part of Canada that the French had occupied, which today it's the province of Quebec, because the French had positioned a very lovely fort there. There was very interesting things in history said about that particular fort, where the King of France at the time said he would make such jokes as to say, you know, when he goes and stands on his balcony there at the Palace of Versailles in Paris, he could see the fort from his balcony. You know, he would make such particular jokes because they were very proud of this fort and what the French were doing there in that part of North America specifically. Now, the British didn't like this. The British obviously, you know, started some things. The French had a whole bunch of Native American tribes on their side. I'm talking about Canadian Native American tribes. And the British had a whole bunch of Native American tribes on their side. So you now had these two colonial powers, specifically with their sort of like native backings, facing off in this large-scale conflict, open conflict there in North America. Last of the Mohicans is an interesting scenario because, according to the movie, it's literally a story of survival. Now, the book, it also positions the scenario. I have the book. I literally have the book. The funny side is I still have, as I mentioned, you know, my reading list is pretty long. But when you start off with The Last of the Mohicans appeals to any kind of reader. It appeals to the young reader who's now starting out. It appeals to the female reader, the woman's reader who wants to read a love story entangled into a survival story situation during a time of war. It appeals to a male reader, a man that's reading, you know, who wants to expand in terms of understanding various time periods in human history. Reading in a scenario of, you know, okay, so what would happen? How does a man, you know, navigate who doesn't want to fight in a war, who doesn't want to be in an army situation? How do they navigate these particular scenarios in various periods? And Last of the Mohicans ticks all these particular boxes. Yes, the story is primarily like 300 years old. Yes, it's 300 years old. However, it helps you to understand a important piece of North American history. Now, why is it known as Last of the Mohicans? The story was written because this particular North American Native American tribe, the Mohicans, the last of them was this guy, the main character. He doesn't say much. Even if you watch the movie, he doesn't say much. This guy, which was played by Daniel Day-Lewis, the main character, his father, his brother, and there was another guy. There were like four. They were literally the last of their tribe. They were literally the last of the Mohicans. Hence the story being the Last of the Mohicans. The story obviously is one based upon survival, because the British and the French signed a famous treaty. If you've watched the movie, the movie is so dramatic. Yes, if you and your girl or you and your wife are going to watch this, just letting the guys know, she is going to be pushed to tears. You'll probably have to sit there with a whole box of Kleenex tissues next to you, because it is a very sad story. I mean, I remember I watched the thing when I was 8. And it was pretty sad. It was a pretty sad story. So when you watch the movie, just know that this is the setting. If you're going to read the book, just know as a reader, it's probably going to be a little bit more intense than the movie. And just understand that it's a discussion based upon this is the setting. And this is one of the things that are always beautiful of books. Books will sometimes give you a fairy tale ending. And books, in many cases, like I've discovered, for example, if you've read Charles Dickens' books, there's one good ending, two. But they're not fairy tale endings. They are endings based upon decisions that happened earlier in the storyline that help the character overcome something or the character achieve a positive. But it's not a fairy tale. Because these elements needed to have been present. In some cases, unfortunately, it's the demise of the character that you have to understand, which makes literature very beautiful. So when you look at The Last of the Mohicans, written by James Fenimore Cooper, just so that you know, as I mentioned, it's a story that's literally 300 years old in its own right. And it tells a very rich story. When I say very rich, it's a very rich story. It explains things that, you know, you probably were thinking about, you know, how did certain countries come about? What was the background of certain countries? What was the historical scenario and the template and the landscape back then for these countries and so forth and so forth. Another one that pops up, because as I said a little bit earlier, I have not read all Louis L'Amour books. The ones that were present when I began reading, as a 10-year-old, these books were in many cases still outside of the scope, outside of my reading scope, because obviously parental guidance played a massive role. I never turned to them, but sort of like in the first three particular books that you can look at, three Louis L'Amour classics that you can start off if you can find them. But like I said, consult your secondhand bookstores wherever you find yourself in Namibia. You'll have Louis L'Amour's Hondo, Louis L'Amour's Down the Long Hills, and Louis L'Amour's Sackett's Land. Now, in many cases, dear listeners, Louis L'Amour does a classical thing. How he writes it, you always have a protagonist. So your protagonist, he's not either good nor bad, but your protagonist, think of it as an independent single man. And then there's definitely going to be bad guys. Just so that you know, there's an independent single guy, and there's definitely going to be bad guys. So that firstly, specifically as, you know, as writing goes, there's going to be a conflict scenario. Always pick it up. With the first title, which we started off on, The Last of the Mohicans, the conflict was already there. So it's a conflict within a conflict setting, which also then flows into other conflict scenarios that you've got to consider. However, when you look at Louis L'Amour titles, you can look at them as like standalone titles. You know, there's this character facing off with this evil organization or collective of bad characters, you know, antagonists, as they would be called. Even though to use the word protagonist sometimes when it comes to West American Westerns is a little bit of a stretch. Because with a protagonist, you have to define according to the systems and the norms that you recognize by in your modern day living of what is a good person. And whether or not this good person utilizes the best tools to achieve a certain goal in the storyline. And that is pretty difficult. But we come back after this, dear listeners. We step into a quick break.
Get extra big savings for an extra special Christmas at WB. Like 2 liter Oros, now only $37.99. 750 gram Crossen Blackwell Mayo for $37.99. 10 kg Bug Pro Fat Cook Flour for $139.99. and 2 kg surf hand wash powder for only 48.99. See all our December specials online at voermanbrock.com. We care.
We come back, dear listeners, from the short break right there, and specifically heading into the third, the last third of today's show, here on The Holiday Reads, on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. So, with the Louis L'Amour titles, for example, we start off with Hondo. One of the specific classics that is highlighted by the, you know, by many of the particular readers, or people out there specifically, is that when you got to look at the book itself, Hondo is a particular storyline that follows, it's within a collection or within a series of books. Because, well, it clearly says here, it's part of Louis L'Amour's Lost Treasures. And it's a particular book where you've got this, once again, man versus nature versus bad guys versus survival versus hunger versus making sure all the bullets, you know, still last scenarios. And it's a pretty interesting aspect also to look into. Now, according to sort of like the summary of the book Hondo, the main character, is obviously trying to, you know, survive in a desert setting. Who knew the ways of the Apache Indians and their ways of staying alive specifically in a desert setting. Now, there's also a woman involved in this particular discussion, who lives on a remote Arizona ranch with her son. She's living alone, obviously raising the son alone. And between Hondo and this woman known as Angelo was a warrior by the name of Vitoro, whose people were preparing to rise up against any particular, farmer, settler, you know, that they found and they came across. And these were the conflict settings that Louis L'Amour always highlighted. And this obviously meant that the discussion was based upon honor, love, and war, and this particular struggle contained within it. So, when you look at these particular kinds of works, specifically that Louis L'Amour wrote about, there was always adventure. Always there was adventure. The next particular Louis L'Amour title also to highlight was a book by the name of Down the Long Hills. Down the Long Hills was specifically a book that looked at another survival setting after a conflict setting. In between, there's a 7-year-old boy and a 3-year-old little girl who managed to survive a gruesome attack that was done upon them by Native Americans, Native American raiders, and they only have a horse, a knife, and the few survival lessons that the boy was taught to look after his baby sister and himself and the horse. And they obviously now have to make it and get somewhere safe. And in between, they come across a very friendly guy who, you know, is willing to help them. Another particular title and obviously, as you can see, the adventure and the survival elements and the storyline of, you know, man versus nature or man versus fellow man or man versus nature, man and something else. It's always a discussion that you can literally see. If this was the setting back then, this was a setting where there was potentially no towns, no services and things. People were going out there into the wild just like that. And then just trying to explore things. Another one was Sackett's Land. Sackett's Land, also a Louis L'Amour title specifically, had a little bit of a weird, I call it a weird twist to it, because it's set in a particular setting that is not primarily, you know, the kind of setting you would think of, but it has a Western, you know, a cowboy, American Western flavor to it. Why? Because after discovering about 6 gold Roman coins buried in the mud in a specific geographic location, the character Barnabas Sackett, can you guess it, guys, with the name Barnabas, enthusiastically invests in goods that he will offer for trade in the U.S. Now, Sackett had a powerful enemy, who was a nephew of an earl, that wants Sackett dead. And obviously, this then sets the scene of the conflict, between Sackett and obviously the other guy who actually is pursuing him. And you can obviously see this is how things build up, because you've got this context, you've got these two stakeholders involved, and this is where the situation is going to go. And it's always based upon, you know, a scenario of achieving either survival positive elements in terms of coming out alive on the other end, or coming out with the riches on the other end. Which sounds pretty similar to sort of like the storylines that you would find in the classical cowboy movies that Clint Eastwood always played in. Guys, I'd advise you, just for the sake of it, don't watch the John Wayne classics. Because at that stage, it looked a little bit odd. John Wayne was a bit older. The John Wayne movies are for the peoples that are now 60 and 70 upwards. I'm sorry, guys, for naming your ages, but the John Waynes are there. They are the John Wayne fans. The guys you want to be watching were guys like Clint Eastwood, who came out with a Fistful of Dollars. They call them the spaghetti westerns. These are the Italian-made western movies. So it's everything that Clint Eastwood made. It's everything that, what's his name? What's the two guys? Bud Spencer and Terence Hill made. They were Italian those two guys are Italian actors. Can you believe it? And then what was the guy's name that came out in the 60s? Charles Bronson. If you watch some of the westerns that Charles Bronson made, you will not be disappointed, guys, because literally watching those movies, yeah, I could go in for like 2 hours of like serious acting, you know, and you were expecting here some sort of a kung fu special situation. Forget about it. It's more the acting that does the thing than literally you looking for special effects. If you watch those movies, you'll get a deep sense, particularly of how the books also flowed, because the books literally flowed like that. In many particular scenarios, obviously, there were other titles and other readers, and other authors, not readers, other authors also to consider when you look at, you know, sort of like expanding your horizons in terms of various writing skills and author skills. One such particular author, also to highlight, is that there's this one particular book, actually two of them. Let me start off with both these two. This one book's name is True Grit. Now, it was written by the author Charles Portis, specifically, and it is, in many particular cases, it's also deemed a particular classic, in terms of, you know, what this book stands for. Now, the author Charles Portis is deemed as one of America's most, you know, important literary voices that has ever existed, specifically for the American Western genres. And particularly, he always had a look at, you know, various particular scenarios to position these storylines in. Now, the story of True Grit is based off adventure and danger, specifically in the Old West, which is a scenario that obviously, you know, starred in 2 award-winning movies. The first one that came out was played by John Wayne, even though I said don't watch John Wayne. The second one, obviously, was also directed by the Coen brothers, starring Jeff Bridges. Now, I watched the Jeff Bridges one, that was directed by the Coen brothers, True Grit. The True Grit one didn't actually play, the Jeff Bridges one didn't actually play up to it, the particular hype, because it's obviously based upon the book. I don't want to watch the John Wayne ones because I did the mistake of watching a reviewer of cowboy westerns or American westerns, And the guy said there was a specific, and it was actually based, it was a comparison that the reviewer in the YouTube channel did between, the American Western movies that were made by American studios in the, up to the 1950s into the 60s. And when the Italians, Ennio Morricone, and what was the other guy's name, the other director, when these guys came in, you know, the particular lens that they produced these Westerns in. And they didn't take someone else's storybook or someone else's intellectual property. They developed their own scripts, their own characters, and they developed the storyline in terms of how they saw a Western needed to flow. Now, when you watch a John Wayne movie, I'm sorry guys, spoiler alert, if you were a fan of the, what's that channel on the pay-per-view service, what's that channel's name? TNT, it was, at one stage it was TNT, but, they changed their name. If you like watching those black and white movies of yester century, in many cases, the acting is just, you know, it's tedious, it's labor intensive. I mean, it's like going to a yoga seminar, but you are all attached there virtually. None of you can do the yoga moves that are being displayed there. Now, the downside of the two reproductions of this book is that they don't live up to the book. The review, I mean, if you ever watched a John Wayne movie, the unfortunate thing is, John Wayne is literally like Steven Seagal. No one beats him up. He doesn't get dirty. He, you know, he walks away with a clean face. It's that kind of a situation where you even sit there as the person who was now wasted their time watching this movie going like, what kind of a fight is this? Have you ever seen a fight where the protagonist does not even get beaten up in any sense? Because that's not the reality. So, when you try watching the Jeff Bridges movie, or the Jeff Bridges version, with that True Grit, is that you can at least see a sense of realism that is brought into the storyline. Now, the actual story of True Grit is a story of revenge. So, the character of Jeff Bridges is one of the sort of like hired guns to be part of the, you know, this particular collection. It's a 14-year-old girl. Yeah, it's a 14-year-old girl who then hires, you know, sort of like two guys or three or four guys specifically to take revenge on the person who killed her father. That's the aim of True Grit. Now, at the heart of this discussion, you will enjoy it because obviously it shows one thing. On the other side, you're trying to understand, okay, so, you know, what's the essence of the story? If you watch the Jeff Bridges movie, it doesn't do justice to the book. If you watch the John Wayne movie, it tries to live up to the book. But once again, like my advice has gone since when we started with the Holiday Reads segment here on Eagle FM, read the book before you watch the movie. Just so that you know, read the book before you watch the movie. Don't try to ride the donkey car without the donkey. Please attach the donkey to the donkey car. The donkey is essential to the donkey car moving forward. That is the same particular logic you've got to apply when it comes to movies that are produced from books. I have also taken that particular advice to heart, which is something that has been shared by my elder siblings to me when they've told me, read the book before you watch that movie, because the movie will disappoint. And in many cases, if you did not read the book and you watched the movie first and you did not know what actually went down in the book, you will be disappointed by what you find. Okay, firstly, you will be in awe. You will be sort of like, wow, look at all this particular special effects and how the storyline flows. It's just the absolute wonderful setting. And if you go read the book, you'll be so disappointed. So, so disappointed. Now, obviously, an interesting thing is that this is a little bit of an insight in terms of how things happened back then in the 1800s. Now, the character Mattie Ross, who had turned 14 as she watched how her father was killed by another guy, back then, was a scenario of sometimes how you could imagine when there is no police back then, when, you know, crime could literally happen and, you know, there was no recourse for aggrieved parties or for the family of the victims and stuff like that. There was no things of court processes and the likes. The book that still lives in the back of my head with its four missing pages, The Marshal, was a book that highlighted how the Americans tried to introduce both magistrates and sheriffs at the same time. The person had to play both roles. But before I actually continue, dear listeners, I actually see there's a caller trying to get through. Eagle FM, good evening.
Right.
How are you doing, Uncle Bona?
Good, man. How are you?
Uncle Bona, why do you sound so off? Didn't you have coffee?
Merry Christmas. You know, I'm saying, yeah, coffee. I only eat coffee when I'm under pressure.
Okay, Uncle Bona. Merry Christmas.
Listen to you. How are you doing?
I'm all right, my son, Uncle Bona. How's your son?
What you're talking about?
Huh?
What book do you think?
Uncle Bona, are you sitting still? Or is it just the weather?
All those books that you are talking about, I never read any of them.
It's okay, Uncle Bona.
I've never read any of them.
I know, Uncle Bona. I will believe you, Uncle Bona.
And you know, I like following you people. It's because to get more knowledge of some of the sources that are very significant in our life and that I have not even heard of.
Mm.
And this is very educative, informative, and I really appreciate new things, actually.
Mm.
Because, you know me, I'm one of the person who is very eager to research and know more. But because of my limitation, so it always me. So otherwise,
how are things? No, it's okay, Uncle Bona. It's just in terms of the how do we call it? The lovely weather. Okay, I don't know if it's lovely anymore because it's a lot of rain. How's it yours, Uncle Bona? Are you still in Windhoek or have you gone out of town for the holiday?
And this thing, by saying it's a holiday, you must not work. You must work. But is this really holiday?
Nah, Uncle Bona, then it is not holiday.
But we are plowing here. We are plowing and we are producing and contributing to the totality of GDP.
Mm.
And I don't know why people are saying it's holiday. It is because they are not recognized the informal activity, economic activity that we are doing here in the rural areas.
No, you are right, Uncle Bona. It's literally that.
When are we, maybe you need to relate this one to even Elmut and say, how do we scrap off that false concept that we are on holiday?
Yeah.
So that we can then see how we can compensate.
Mm.
Can you compensate those who are actually produced? And their activities in the value of the holiday time.
Mm.
So there is a lot of statutory issues that need to be worked on so that we can formalize the holiday that people are talking about. The holiday to me, it's when you are, it can be engaged physically or spiritually or mentally, whatever. Perhaps in activity that you might think that you're not contributing well to the GDP. But if this activity that we are in here, working, whether it's a wedding celebration or ceremony, any other thing, whether it contributes to the economic value. Let us not regard those ones as holiday. Because I know holiday you can also contribute something meaningfully.
No, Angabona, you are 100% right. Do you know what's the interesting thing I also saw today? Even though it's just here in the capital, is that even though this Monday felt like it could be a Saturday or a Sunday, you know, like an extent, like a, it had like a public holiday feeling, was literally the amount of business that the retailers were making because of, in preparation for the back to school season.
Just imagine that. And it's mandatory kind of engaged activity. And we are saying it's horrible.
And you are right, Angabona, because even if you think about the origins of this particular term was obviously based upon, let's say it's the office workers in private and in government sector who have the opportunity of taking leave, and other parts of the economy don't have that luxury.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
We can achieve some kind of law reform in that area and see. So that, you know, here is now, for example, I say yes, I'm the home, you know, working. But my household or many households in the village, they don't get chance. And those ones that are being granted are regarded as vulnerable. But all along, whether during cultivation or not, my people don't get any of those grants. Why don't you think that they are not bettering the health cost for this? Because we are working.
I'm listening, Angabona.
So please, let me how we can formalize this holiday thing.
Okay, Angabona, I'll put it down as a subject matter for our, when the home run comes back, because next week, Helmut and I, we are split in this schedule. So, I'll put it down as a particular talking point for then.
Thank you very much. New Year in advance.
Not a problem. And the same to you too, Angabona. Enjoy the, how do you call it, the last 3 days, 2.5 days of 2025.
I'm meeting with my family here now. Very delicious one. But my phone, are you a frog? You say you don't eat frog because...
Let me just say, Angabona, it's a meat I don't know. On that note, Angabona. Thanks, Angabona. Now, dear listeners, getting back from the appreciated digression, even if it's, you know, in the sort of like the first seconds, it was still contained within the holiday reads scenario. Do remember, guys, that it's an important thing always that you still maintain an element of, you know, being interested in reading literature, in specifically whether or not you read reports and work-related, you know, materials that still will help you specifically, you know, sort of like keep your reading habits going. The best scenario, obviously, is if you read other particular material outside of your particular work scenario as well. The nice thing is, obviously, in this particular sense, just to share a little bit of a tongue-in-cheek sort of like story with you. So, since I'm also an avid video gamer, PC, you know, computer video gamer, I'm not a console. I have advanced. I have evolved from the PlayStation Xbox platform that many people now love saying that they are. The reason being is because I realized that computer gaming is way better than console gaming, and it is an actual fact. You actually, your skills in terms of reacting to how the game, you know, guides you and interacts with you is way better than if you were doing or interacting with the game on the console levels. So what usually happens if there's something that happens to the video game playing part, I drop the video games and then I literally just read. Even though I read during the year, you know, work-related things and non-fiction materials like reports and textbooks and books and specific kinds of books, like the particular book of, what's the author, the Namibian economist, Robin Sherborne. Well, he's actually Namibian British. He's, you know, his guide to the Namibian economy. And even, what's the other book's name that I also bought? The BRICS related book on development. Even if I read those particular materials, still, they don't pique your interest more like literature does, because literature helps you to look into a specific time frame. So, I'm just sharing, guys, specifically that, you know, it's actually a particular good thing that we talk about holiday reads and giving you particular recommendations and suggestions for specific kinds of reading materials. There is another author that it is considered potentially one of the best action movies, put that in inverted commas, that had come out in the last 20 years. But the issue with this particular book was that this book was a very good... Okay, firstly, I did not know that this book was the reason that the movie was made. Reason being is that the movie is so good. And you'd have to ask yourself the question of, if this movie was made from a book, how good is the book then? Now, I didn't watch the movie when it came out, until the movie did spark my interest and I decided to go watch the movie. The movie's name is No Country for Old Men, written by the author Cormac McCarthy. Now, Cormac McCarthy writes this particular book in the scenario that it has a weird Western element in it. Yes, the protagonist is not the best, it's not the best ethical example I can put forward to you, because here's the thing. He picks up a bag of money at a crime scene. A crime scene only becomes a crime scene if the police were informed that said particular crime scene had taken place, right? But obviously, if you've ever watched the movie No Country for Old Men, starring, what's the guy's name? Javier Bardem is the bad guy, the assassin that walks around with an oxygen tank, and Josh Brolin. You would think that Josh Brolin's character is somehow doing good. He's not actually the best ethical example I can put forward in terms of doing good. So hence, specifically, if you thought about the storyline, you would literally have to view it out of a sense of survival, out of a sense of, you know, the, what can I use? Out of, you know, the rat trying to stay away from the, or trying to run away from the cat because the rat stole cheese. The cat doesn't want the cheese. The cat was only sent to go and get the cheese. But the rat knows that the cheese is not his. He found the cheese under dubious circumstances because the rat the next day had to do like a run of the routine. He had to go and around and check, you know, if everything was fine in on the farm. He gets to a specific point on the, you know, to a specific hill that allows him to look out into the distance, and he sees this collection of cars just standing there. Now that's Josh Brolin's character. Josh Brolin's character approaches these cars. When, as he steps closer, he realizes that all these cars were stopped there for a nefarious activity. In the heart of the nefarious crime scene, based upon a nefarious activity, nefarious, which implies that this was not for good that these guys were meeting here, was a sense that everyone had killed each other at this particular scene. And the interesting thing is, there's money. There happens to be just a bag of money sitting in one of the cars. So Josh Brolin's character takes the car, takes the money. His character's name is Llewellyn Moss. Probably the most Welsh name that you can find. Well, I technically also knew a whole bunch of guys with the name Llewellyn. One of them was my best friend. Moss's character then obviously gets pursued by the very famous hitman or assassin that is sent by this Mexican cartel, which is Javier Bardem's character, which is then setting the storyline in motion for you, the viewer, the person viewing this. Now, if you've watched the movie, I would recommend potentially you go and read the book. Now, this ultimately does bring us up to the end for our show for today here specifically on Eagle FM. This is, or was, the Holiday Reads. We'll be back same time, same place tomorrow, dear listeners. And on that particular note, stay tuned for the next program to follow on after the break. We'll see each other again. Enjoy the rest of your evening in our company.